on this episode of Edge of the Web.
Unless my message passes the RAS test, unless I show something that's new or interesting or relevant, I'm noise. And most marketers and salespeople and speakers don't realize that you have maybe 15 to 30 seconds to have an RAS-ready message get through, or you're hosed.
Your weekly digital marketing trends with industry trend-setting guests. You're listening and watching Edge of the Web. Winners of Best Podcast from the Content Marketing Institute for 2017. Hear and see more at edgeoftheweb.com. Now, alongside Tom Broadbeck, here's your host, Aaron Sparks.
So welcome back, crew, all the edgers out there. Yeah, I'm going to keep on using it. Darn it. Hey, welcome back to our show. Thanks for joining us. If you haven't come across Edge of the Web before, thanks for joining it. Hey, this is a great show that, well, humbly, I should say, that we have a passion of delivering great interviews focused on digital marketers from around the planet. This show is actually produced by Edge by Site Strategics at Edge Media Studios in downtown Indianapolis, Indiana, and we're focused on all the latest trends of digital marketing and marketing influencers. You can actually check out our show over at edgeofthewebradio.com. That's edgeofthewebradio.com. Again, we're powered by Site Strategics, the title sponsor of the show, our marketing firm, and we're focused on the agile digital marketing strategy and execution. If you're interested in what agile is, just give us a shout. Go over to sitestrategics.com. S-I-T-E strategics.com and go ahead and give us a quick call or just jump into our contact form. We'd be happy to have a conversation about what Agile means and what possibly we can bring to the table for your digital marketing success. Free of charge. We love talking digital tactics. Right, Tom?
Oh, we love it.
We do love it. Hey, I'm Aaron Sparks, your host, as well as CEO of Site Strategics. And to my left is the indomitable and very persuasive Tom Broadbeck.
Persuasive. Yes,
you are. Director of Digital Marketing here. Digital Media. There my God, go. I fell apart again.
All right. So we're at 296.
296 and screwed up again.
That's all right.
Welcome to 2019.
Yeah, no. Been a good start to the year.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know what? We've been doing this almost, is that 7 years almost?
Almost.
We started in
February.
February 2012, right? Or was it 2011?
Whatever. 19 minus 7 would be 12, right?
You the math, man, right? It's been a long haul, Tom.
Yes.
We've had some good times, and we've talked to a lot of great influencers and marketing specialists, and we've learned a heck of a lot as well. And that's one of the reasons that we do this show is to educate ourselves here at Site Strategics to be able to keep our powder dry and our swords sharp so we can know what's happening, what's trending in the space of digital marketing, because it is constantly moving, is it not?
It's always moving, and we're going to talk about some ways it could be moving in the future here in a little bit.
That's right. That's right. So we also wanted to introduce our guest on the show today. It's Steve Woodruff. He's the author of the book Clarity Wins. Steve, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show, guys.
You're more than welcome. So how was your 2019 start?
So far, so good. It was a quiet end of the year. A lot of my clients just sort of disappear and evaporate in the last 2 weeks of the year.
So hopefully they came back.
They do come back. Yes. We like that. So far, it's kicked off very, very nicely.
Excellent. Excellent. We want to dive in and unpack some of the key concepts from your book. But first and foremost, we always like to enter into our show with some news of the day. This is a special news item. We're going to jump into some predictions, marketing predictions for 2019. Steve, you game for that?
I'm game.
All right. Well, let's roll that beautiful beam footage.
I was very excited to start my reportings.
This week's trending topics.
All right. So from Social Media Examiner, Lisa D. Jenkins actually gives us 10 and a half, maybe 10, maybe 11, maybe 12 marketing predictions from 2019 from top marketers. And I got to say, just out of the gate, is it's almost like a Colleagues of Edge show, I'm proud to say, because about three quarters of the marketers are contributing into that article. Right, Tom?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So the first one here is from Mitch Joel, who I did have scheduled on the show, but some scheduling things came up. So he's a half, I could say. He talks a lot about, he predicts that a lot smart audio, or he titled it Smart Audio Requires Integration. So pretty much he says audio will play a bigger role with smart devices, our home devices and the Echoes and that sort of thing. And I think I should have pulled it up, but Google Home expects to be in some crazy number of devices in the next year with their Google Assistant. And here he's mentioned that 84% of Amazon Echo's users are satisfied. 28% of smart speaker owners buy things from them.
Boy, that's a big number I'd like to challenge.
Yeah, I know. Amazon smart speakers reach 15% of U.S. homes, and over a billion devices provide voice assistant access today. So that area is just obviously going to continue to grow and grow. And it'll be interesting to see how that technology continues to grow with that.
You know, it's actually turned into a PA system into my house.
Yeah, that's a good feature of it.
Two of the kids just got dots, so I'm sorry to say, but we've got dots in all the kids' rooms just to not only let them know when dinner is, but also we can drop in on them.
Yeah. Are you able to listen?
Yes, we are.
Via that?
Yeah. Nice. And heard some messed up conversations. Like the two youngest brothers, hey, don't cry or we'll get in trouble. What is that?
Big brother, big daddy, big brother, all the same.
So, Steve, what do you think about that first prediction on the voice search and the smart speakers?
It's a no-brainer prediction.
Yeah.
I have to admit, I tend to try to keep in touch with trends. And the smart speaker thing took me by surprise a couple years ago. I did not see it coming. I thought that this was a nice toy. I had realized years ago, just from watching Star Trek, and just from common sense, that voice-activated computing was the way it would go.
Sure.
I just was not looking at these little utility devices being the way in. And it turns out those were the Trojan horses that got it in there. So I think they will continue to expand, and then we're going to have some more privacy disasters.
Absolutely.
And there will be some retrenching.
Oh, you better believe it. And, I mean, the subtle, not so subtle play actually, but the win for digital marketers and companies far and wide are the listening tools of these speakers that can then turn into programmatic changes in your marketing. So literally, audiences around the world. I mean, if you don't know you're being listened to, I mean your data is being sold upstream from having those devices in your house. Now, I'm not trying to be conspiratorial. It's the truth. We've seen it. It has been demonstrated. But you know what? That's also a convenience for the consumer. So, you know, be prepared. If you're bringing that into the house, then you're going to have even smarter marketing to you. And that's maybe what consumers want to see.
Yeah, and that's what kind of Robert Rose kind of talks about the second one here. He says first-party data acquisition takes precedence. So he says, I'm all in for bullish content, digital, and the idea of data acquisition, specifically for building audiences. He sees three trends developing in content, social, and digital. First is a continued meteoric rise of automation and artificial intelligence.
Yep.
Second trend is the need to scale content-oriented operations. And the third trend is to continued increase of importance of content marketing acquisition of first-party data in the era of GDPR and other privacy laws and regulations that could be coming elsewhere.
Thank you. Well, I mean, to your point, Steve, is that there are going to be data breaches and there are going to be privacy issues. You know, we've seen some huge ones in Facebook, obviously, as well as Google Plus just alerted us to a breach at the end of the year regarding their what was the information, like 56 million users had their information available and hacked.
Mm-hmm.
Or exploitable. So that's why they're shutting down Google Plus even sooner.
There was a fascinating article in the New York Times last week about getting access to all this aggregated data from the phones that are pinging wherever you are.
Right.
And the ability to track exactly where people were, exactly how long they were there, even if certain apps weren't active.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of frightening to see how granular that information was.
Oh, yeah. And the CEO going before of Google going before Congress and being asked, can your device track you of your movement inside the room? And he responds, well, not by default. That's like the creepiest response I've ever heard. Let's jump into Seth Godin's prediction. Individuals will reclaim their social independence. And I like this. This is a good, fresh perspective here. He predicts that over the next 2 years, people will put an increasingly anxious focus on their social media standing. Then, one by one, they'll realize it's not in their interest. They have, in fact, become pawns in the system that views them as a product, not the customer, and once the realization kicks in, he's hoping that people will get back to the first principles, the idea of seeing and being seen by people who matter to them. Well said there. Yeah. Because I mean, I've been dying to hear the pendulum swinging back and that status updates are not the focus as soon as you wake up in the morning. Not that that's my focus, but you know, hey.
Yeah.
There's actually a few.
I think that the pendulum is going to swing significantly, and I've been looking for months at this trend. Jay Baer released his book about talk triggers. Mm-hmm. I released mine about referral marketing. Mark Schaefer has one coming out about influencers, Seth's. And the fact is that with all the incredible amount of noise and all the digital nonsense going on, all of us know that the way business happens is through person-to-person recommendations and referrals. And I actually believe that we're going to move away from some of this technology and algorithm driven stuff and move back to what has always been the way things happen, which is human trust, mouth to mouth, mouth to ear. I looked at the publication of all these books within about a 6 month period as a really nice meta narrative. Yeah. That there is going to be a backlash and that technology is not the answer to everything.
No, you're absolutely right, and I think that needs to be embraced culture wide and not just for goal for marketing and influencing. But I mean, this is permeating all walks of life, and I was just having a conversation with my daughter who goes to high school that there's such a technological crutch. The students are throwing on their earbuds and isolating themselves from the rest of the world. They're certainly not learning any type of social interaction, and man, that has to be uprooted because we're going to be growing adults that have no idea how to communicate. There's a grandstanding right there.
Yeah, we better not get too far on that. We'll never get off of it.
Mark Schaefer actually jumped in there into this article and talked about brands must return social to social media. He's actually talking about a number of points. Conversations have given way to broadcasting content. Social media became an IT function and was automated to the point of being soulless. Humans with personalities and names were replaced by corporate personas and branded voices. And he's just kind of going through the litany of where we've been. Success was measured in clicks rather than in relationships and loyalty. And social media his primary role evolved to become a place to weaponize influencers. So his thoughts are that in 2019 and the future, it's time to take back social marketing from the IT department. That's a funniest sentence in its own right. And provide relevant human connections, form reliable and trustworthy communication channels, express shared ideas, display human emotions, and create unique entertaining experiences. The list goes on and on of things that are going to be shifting. And boy, that's a whole other thing. You kind of look at it from a maturity of marketing is that everybody can kind of do the lowest common denominator, and then that gets to be noise, and ultimately you're just going to have to get into the space where authenticity is the cornerstone of marketing. And I mean, Mark's got it right, hitting the nail on the head right there. Steve, what do you think about that?
I got to spend most of a day with Mark late last year, where we were brainstorming this whole idea of where marketing is going and the backlash and actually the marketing rebellion that's likely to happen, which is going to be the theme of his book. And he and I are able to see a lot of the trends, and we both believe that a lot of what we know to be the human aspects of marketing mm-hmm. are really going to come back to the surface. And I can't wait to see the rebellion happening.
Oh, yeah. It really does tie into the previous prediction as well. I mean, there's going to be a purification of some of the social noise into a good deal more, less chaotic, less frequent, but authentic. I can only hope authentic communications inside social. The next prediction here is from Michael Stelzner, CEO of Social Media Examiner, and we've not talked to him on the show. We probably should get him in on 2019. He says, consumers, whoa, sorry about that.
Hello.
Hi there. Consumers flock to passive YouTube-type experiences. The pendulum, hey, this is a common thread, is shifting away from active social interactions back to more traditional passive experiences as they begin to detox from social platforms that prompt and expect interactions. They'll shift back to experiences that instead entertain, inform, and educate. That means that people will spend a lot more time listening to podcasts. There you go. Come on, edgers. Reading and watching videos on platforms like YouTube, Facebook, and will become short-duration drive-by experiences for most people. I think that's a very apropos perspective. I think people are getting burnt out on all the interaction that's expected of them, like we're talking about today.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Our church, I'm going to bring it up, our church does a 21-day fast at the beginning of the year, and so we got...
Sure.
He challenged, obviously, from a religious perspective, it's fast as you don't eat food. But he challenged us to do other things. And so I'm doing a 21-day fast social media just to see how it goes. And tell you what, it's been an eye-opening first 2 days of how often I check social media. My bathroom trips are a lot more boring. you know, it's just crazy. It's just like I realize how much time I'm spending. Yeah. I have a 2-year-old daughter, and it's like I just want to spend more time with her when I'm at home. And I want books. There's books I want to read. I'm doing a puzzle.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. It's amazing what you can do when you're not looking at social media, all these things you can do.
It's like a drug.
It is.
It truly is. It's that dopamine injection in the back of your mind. Those little tiny drips of dopamine. And wow, it's a whole new world, is it not?
It is.
Wow.
But I'm still, I mean, for, say, in our industry, we still have to.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Still have to get on to schedule a Facebook post for this show and that sort of thing. But yeah, definitely significantly dropping social media for the next 21 days.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
You didn't share that with me. Wow. All right. So
there we go.
We're actually. Breaking by having you post social for Edge, you're actually breaking your.
That's right. You can still use tools to go in and not have to sign into it and make your posts.
All right. I'm starting to feel really bad for doing this.
I'm on it right now, and I'm not supposed to be. And
I'm going to be under church discipline for being
spread. That's too funny. All right. Well, we have another prediction from Jay Baer, and this is interesting, especially with the Talk Triggers book that he just released. Brands are going to lean into controversy in an era where it's harder than ever to break through, and every little thing can be. Can breed controversy. Some companies are gaining attention by leaning into delicate situations, such as REI closing the doors on Black Friday and asking consumers to opt outside. Nike embracing Colin Kaepernick's role in the fight against police brutality. Salesforce's stand in favor of business tax to help combat San Francisco's homelessness problem. So you're now seeing where, a decade ago, companies were hesitant and avoiding any type of controversy. They're now starting to step into it, plant their flag, and let the arrows fly. They're going to stand by their particular mantra as it ties into their mission and their value system. And you're starting to see these influencers start doing a number of things that corporations are starting to tie into, right?
You've mentioned the most important part is it has to tie into their existing value system, mission. So if it's just a stunt to make noise, to create controversy for the sake of controversy, and people don't sense that there's a genuineness to it, that's not going to fly. But if whatever stand they take is congruent with the brand, then there's always going to be people that are going to love you and hate you, so you may as well plant your flag.
Yeah, I don't know. I think with just the environment that is social media, I feel like people will start to backlash against that and see it for what it is.
Because
I don't want to be buying products, hoping and wondering if I'm making a political statement by wearing a certain shirt. Like, I mean, this doesn't have a brand on it, but if it's, I'm wearing a Nike shirt, I don't want it to be, like, if Nike does something else that's controversial, I don't want to be wearing a Nike shirt that's Ohio State Nike shirt going down downtown Indianapolis, and somebody says, you're wearing a Nike shirt, and
you are, you know, by relationship of the brand mark, condoning and endorsing whatever they're deciding to do and however controversial it is. So
like, I don't want to shop that way. I don't want to dress that way. I don't want to live my life that way. I mean, it just, I don't know.
They're sucking the consumers into their brand and their moral play, right? Or immoral play, wherever they want them to go. And that's probably a very risky scenario, because you certainly could have a backlash, and you're going to lose. As soon as you go in and you elect to define yourself into one political statement, you're going to alienate the other part of the audience. And you just, I mean, are these companies really understanding the risk they're taking, or is it just the thing to do in 2018 and 2019 to clamor onto something that's controversial just to get views and visibility?
Yeah. I think a lot of these companies do understand what they're doing. They are deciding, look, we have a tribe, we have our fans, we know that there are people that are not going to like us, and that's okay. And they are very consciously taking a risk with the sense that we're going to gain more than we lose. They're not stupid. Maybe some of them are stupid. I don't know. But it's not the kind of course I would naturally take. I'm not inclined to go in that direction. But for some of these companies, they want to build their brand loyalty and their tribe based on these social political things that are bigger than themselves. And, you know, it's a free market. Let them try and see what happens.
Well, I'll just be sitting at the sidelines and watch things as the careen out of control. Another prediction from Suzanne, is it Susan Beebe? She talks about LinkedIn gains prominence and growth. She starts with a continued distrust of the media is growing regularly, and not only with the violation of user trust and policy and privacy issues, but there's going to be continued data breaches and questionable data sharing agreements between third parties. It's going to lead to government regulation and additional hurdles for Facebook advertisers. There's a growing delete Facebook hashtag sentiment out there. That means that marketers are going to need to shift to different platforms. So she offers up LinkedIn because it has been growing as a very robust platform for advertising. But it also is, it separates the wheat from the chaff, because it's getting to professionals in a particular professional intake of content, as opposed to Facebook, where it's all over the map and you have the dichotomy of your personal and your professional life. LinkedIn's separation, I think, and she thinks, is going to be connected in, and there's going to be a growth in user and brand engagements due to the professional nature of LinkedIn. User experiences a higher quality of conversation, less political arguing, which will encourage more screen time and ad impressions. All right, so LinkedIn, woohoo!
I am so over people on LinkedIn.
That
add me on LinkedIn, and then as soon as I hit accept, I'm more open on LinkedIn and accepting people who I am on LinkedIn than I would be on Facebook or whatever. If somebody adds me on LinkedIn, I'm probably going to accept them, but if they send me a message shortly thereafter with the sales pitch, that is...
Oh, it's disgusting.
It's terrible, and it's making me dread any time I get a notification from LinkedIn.
It's like we used to have this little sanctuary where the crap wouldn't flow over. I mean, it was the LinkedIn relationship and referral connections there, and now it's just being exploited.
It's like, just connect, and then you can see each other's feeds, and that's fine, but don't send me a message for your $25 an hour services that you offer.
So I don't think you agree with Susan.
No.
Steve, what
actually,
about you?
I do. I agree with Susan, at least for a certain set of people whose customers are primarily professional, white-collar, corporate. In fact, I was advising one of my client partner companies just this morning that probably the best use of their marketing dollars and strategy for the coming year is to invest in LinkedIn. You can upload your videos there. You can establish thought leadership there. You can put up content. You can reach our native audience so much easier on LinkedIn because they've already opted into the platform.
Sure.
And yeah, there are bad actors everywhere. There's always going to be spammers and jerks and people selling snake oil. But I have found over the years, and I have been on social platforms for over 12 years, that over time, consistently, LinkedIn has proven to be more and more and more useful for my audience.
Yeah, and that's what she's talking about. And what you're seeing is the, I mean, this has just happened in the last 6 months to a year, this explosion of spammers. And the algorithm is going to change, and hopefully LinkedIn will be able to help us clean out that riffraff, right? But we'll see how that goes. And especially, I mean, the growth of the advertising side of LinkedIn, and we're certainly looking for streaming from a video standpoint coming in, because that's going to be the key for a heck of a lot of professionals if we can do this type of stream inside of LinkedIn.
Aaron, do you have a personal one?
A personal one? What? From
the prediction? One's not in the article.
Well, I started to kind of clamor around just this pendulum swinging back for the antisocial side of things. And I think people are going to get more and more kind of intimate with their connections and not just be looking for such a quoth of new likes and new followers. I mean, it's all been BS for such a long time. Mm-hmm. I really do think that authenticity and more micro social platforms like Quora, like we talked about last year, these micro platforms are going to be the next evolution for consumers to kind of stake their own flag of loyalty, that they won't get the mass marketing like Facebook, that they'll enjoy a smaller community of connections. And I think that's the next realm of social engagement. Is it gets back to that your 52 friends, right? Mm-hmm. That was that ceiling, I can't remember, a decade ago, whenever it came out, that you can really only have about 50 odd friends, and everything else is all diminishing returns. They just don't, there's no real connection. I think we're going to be into this micro marketing and micro social platforms here in the near future.
I think Yelp will be purchased.
Oh.
I think with the growth of there's another, I don't remember who said it now, or I would give them credit for saying this, but with the growth that there is in the smart speakers, having all that kind of data about companies and everything, either Google or Amazon will purchase Yelp.
That's a pretty good prognostication there. There's a word for you. How about Steve?
I love that word. I think we are going to continue to see consolidation, and there will be, of course, the danger that comes with that is the more access to data these big companies have, the more dangerous it's going to be from a privacy perspective. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, there will be, I think, a flood of people running to the big players like the Googles, the AWSs, and the others, because of the cybersecurity issues and all of the phishing and the even AI empowered viruses now, that's going to get even worse. So I think we're going to end up in an escalating arms race, actually, between the bad players and the supposedly white hat good players. But I'm quite concerned of how white those hats really are with our Googles, AWSs, IBMs, and others that provide back end. And maybe the only companies that would have enough technical clout to keep some of the virus stuff and the AI stuff from us.
Yeah, that was a scary proposition of hearing more about the AI virus deployments, because that's all of a sudden if it's thinking and adjusting based on a number of different factors, then man, my gosh, again, Skynet prediction right there. And did you catch at the Consumer Electronic Conference here what Apple jumped into? It was a really cool thing that they did, especially with countering the downplay of their stock going down, right? They threw in a massive billboard. What happens in the iPhone stays in the iPhone right there in Las Vegas. That was a pretty smart trick. Anybody catch that?
I did not.
Oh, okay. That was pretty cool.
I'm off social media.
It obviously stayed in Las Vegas.
Obviously did. Yeah, I don't know what I'm actually voyeuring over there right now. I tell you, if you want to be a voyeur of what's happening on the show on a regular basis, just jump over to edgeofthewebradio.com and join our newsletter, our weekly newsletter that we're sending out each and every week. Yes, it's weekly. And you know what? We're talking about, we're covering the stories, the predictions that we had for 2019, as well as who we've talked to, some summary of the interview, as well as who we're going to be talking to. So you can also go over and, you know, text to the number, not while you're driving, to the number 22828, the word Edge Talk, and you can start your sign up right there. We're doing nothing else with your email except sending you digital nuggets of gold. So jump on there and be part of the Edge Nation. How about that? Edge Nation as opposed to Edgers? Edgers just sounds like landscaping.
That's right. I have one of those in my garage hanging on a hook.
So we won't have Edgers. It's the Edge Nation. All right. Now I'm Lisa Jackson. All right, so follow all the featured trending topics at edgeofthewebradio.com. Let's deep dive with this week's featured guest.
Now it's time for Edge of the Web featured interview with Steve Woodruff, author of the new book, Clarity Wins.
Yes, I just did say Lisa Jackson.
I don't know the reference either.
I'm getting old, man. All right, hey, let's introduce our audience to Steve Woodruff. He's known as the King of Clarity. In a world full of noise and distraction, just like we were talking about, Steve helps businesses craft a message so clear that they can be heard, remembered, and referred. In over 30 years of business experience, he's actually consulted with companies ranging from solo startups to top five pharma. His new book, Clarity Wins, launched in November. So, Steve, how's the book going? But first and foremost, give us your backstory in your words.
My backstory is I started my career work in the healthcare field and have actually been over the years.
Hold on a second, Steve.
Pharmaceuticals.
Hold on a second, Steve. Give that to us again because your connection just broke up, and I want to make sure that your introduction or your history is known far and wide. So give it to us again.
Okay. So for 30 years, I've been involved in various aspects of the healthcare field in sales, marketing, consulting, technology. And one of the elements that came out of that was I just began to really love the marketing and branding part. And I worked with small companies. And so with a small company, you wear lots of hats. You sell, you market, you consult. And I really did enjoy the branding and marketing. And when I started my own company about 12 years ago, I began meeting with companies to try to help them figure out who they were so I could refer them more intelligently. I created a referral network, paid referral network, which I still run today. And it turns out that in a span of a half a day or a day, I could sit down with the leaders of a company and help them figure out exactly who they were, what they were doing, what their message is, who their ideal client was. And this developed into a practice that I now call Clarity Consulting. So I have been doing Clarity for individuals and companies for many years and blogging about it for many years to the point where I had so much material, it was either going to be write a book or I would drown in it. Mm-hmm. So I decided I better write the book. And so that was a good piece of last year, was putting all that information together into a long form, into a book. And it was finally ready for publication in November. And so it's been really great getting that launched and putting all that information in a systematic, relatively short compass. Mm-hmm. And I have found, as many authors have found, that if you've been saying or writing things for years, it's not until it's all put together in one place that people finally get it and say, oh, I see what you've been saying. And I've definitely seen that effect with the book since it's come out.
Well, that's excellent. And kudos to you. And this is your first book?
This is my first serious book. I did a joint author book with 12 others the year before, kind of a trial run.
Oh, cool.
I've written some small ebooks, but this was my first real venture at a major business book. And I'd had this boiling inside of me for a long time, mm-hmm. but like many people, I felt completely paralyzed at what do you do? What's the process? How mm-hmm. do you start? Do you self-publish? Do you do this? Do you do this? And the ignorance that I had about the process was keeping me back from doing it until I found someone who served as my editor, Josh Burnoff, who acted as my Sherpa to bring me through the whole process, to help shape the content, edit the content. And that's what moved it from raw material to a real book.
Excellent. I love that word, Sherpa. I truly do.
I got my wife a Sherpa coat for Christmas.
You did?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, that's disgusting.
Hopefully it's been washed.
I'm saying. All right, so clarity. Let's get to clarity. It could be said, well, I mean, from a business owner position, I know what we do. We're clear on what we do. From that subjective vantage point of a business owner or marketing team, especially, without a discipline of clarity, right? How do you break through to that kind of cognitive dissonance?
So clarity, I view in three dimensions. There's clarity of identity.
Okay.
An individual and a company has to know really at the core, at the DNA level, here's what we're all about. Many, many companies are not clear on their identity. They try to do two or three or four different things. Followed is clarity of focus. If we know what we're really best at and what our real identity is, what are we going to do? How are we going to focus our efforts? What are we going to create as an offering and as a package? What is going to be the niche that we're pursuing? And then the third step is clarity of message. How do we take all this material and put it in simple, human-ready, memorable messaging? The kind of messaging that's so simple that I can talk to you and in 15 seconds, you can at least grasp something important about what I do. And you can remember it enough that when you're talking to your neighbor the next day and they talk about their confusion and their brand messed up and you say, oh, I just met the king of clarity. I'm going to make a referral. And that's what I call the second moment of truth. The first moment of truth is, can I get my point across to you in 30 seconds in simple language?
Yep.
The second moment of truth is, can you tell somebody about me? Because as we know, referrals are the way to get business.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why I put all this emphasis on clarity as a tool to gain referrals.
And that's a very, very important point. Again, it's the sounding board. You can certainly... experience your own clarity and you can, as a business owner or a marketing professional, you can believe that you've got it down, but the litmus test, if somebody else that's not well-versed and not knowing your exact jargon, if they can actually not repeat, but say it in their own words what you're about, you've been able to accomplish that, right?
Now, if you look over my shoulder, you'll see an orange piece of artwork that I have embraced as my own for years from Hugh McLeod. And it says, you can't read the label of the jar you're in. And the fact is that most companies cannot clearly articulate their message because they're so immersed in their own stuff that it's hard to separate the forest from the trees. And we all suffer from what Harvard professor Steven Pinker calls the curse of knowledge.
Yep.
We know so much that we assume everybody else knows it. And we assume they know our acronyms, our jargon, the problem we're solving. And they don't. People don't know. Even our customers often do not know how to articulate what we do for them.
Amen.
Our responsibility to create word packages that, and it takes someone from the outside to do it, because we need somebody else to look at all of our stuff and distill it into a clear way of expressing that a normal human can understand.
Excellent. That's the obvious truth that it does need to be explained to us regularly, and it's the objective perspective that you're tying into that a lot of companies won't embrace. So you've got uphill battle a lot of times to be able to communicate that not only truth, but also you've got a whole nother factor. Once you get that beachhead, right, Then you have to actually teach a discipline on how to actually be clear in not only their identity, but also how they go about messaging. Because it's one thing in its own right to, okay, yeah, we've defined that. But by our own practices, by our own habits, we are unclear creatures.
Correct. Well, part of the problem is that we have heavy competition in our messaging, which is that every single person that we're talking to is surrounded by a vast amount of noise, digital noise, literal analog noise. Yep. The amount of sensory stimulation that we each are subject to, let alone all the pings of the phone, all the emails coming in. And the way the brain handles this and a little bit of brain science really unlocks the key to clarity. Hmm. The way the brain handles this is through something called the RAS, the reticular activating system. And the RAS's job is to filter out all the noise and only focus on what's new, what's relevant, what's important, and maybe what's funny or surprising. Okay. So its job is to get rid of all the detritus and say, here's what matters. Well, unless my message passes the RAS test, unless I show something that's new or interesting or relevant, I'm noise. Hmm. And most marketers and salespeople and speakers don't realize that you have maybe 15 to 30 seconds to have an RAS ready message get through or you're hosed. It doesn't matter if you're the right person or not. Doesn't matter if what you have to say is interesting. If you're spewing jargon and bullet points and giving too much information, you're filtered out.
That's very interesting. It's almost it almost begets kind of a discipline that that marketing needs to look at having that RAS filter. But isn't there also a kind of a listener variable as well? So one person's RAS is not another person's RAS to a particular degree?
No, the RAS works this way with everybody.
Okay.
But what the relevance is different. So if somebody says to me, I construct software for drones, okay, and I have zero interest in drones, okay, I don't care if that's the case, then I'm not going to listen.
Sure.
But if the case is, and it is, that one of my sons is in a college course in Tennessee to become a drone pilot, a four-year course that's offered at MTSU on drone, now I'm interested. And if someone comes to me and starts talking about drones, I'm tuned in. A few years ago, wasn't relevant.
Hmm. So that is the variable I think that I was trying to find is that that additional factor of relevance and interest, right?
Right.
So if it's got to be RES proof, the message, right, there are some distinguishing characteristics of a message, a marketing message that you have to kind of forge for each and every, not only the campaign, but the actual medium and the marketing product that you're actually rolling out, either graphic or text. So do you have in your book some of these key litmus tests to be able to see if your message is truly RAS proof?
What I advise is that people take all the relevant stuff that they do and boil it down into three formats, what I call snippets, stories, and symbols, because these are the things our brain quickly and grab onto. So snippets are very short statements. It may be a phrase, it may be a sentence that's a distilled summary, gets right to the heart of things, and it's in language that a regular person can understand. Believe it or not, it's very difficult for business people to speak in snippets. We just tend to say too much, and too much in this case is not helpful.
Correct. Yeah.
Stories, our brains are hardwired for stories. And one of the best ways to bypass the RAS is to have an interesting story, a success story, an origin story, a customer story, because the brain automatically tunes into and remembers stories. Stories have emotional impact more than bullet points do. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people just speak in bullet points instead of telling stories. Hmm. But one of the most powerful things is symbols. Symbol is your analogy or your metaphor or your word picture that summarizes everything and hangs it on an existing memory hook. So if I say that your webcast is the Mercedes of technology webcasts, then I'm saying it's the high end, it's the exclusive, it's the high quality, it's whatever, because I've stolen the imagery of a Mercedes and I've attached it to you. One of the reasons why I embraced the title that someone else gave me, King of Clarity, was because it's this verbal shorthand that is memorable and that someone can say, they may not know all the details of what I do, but man, they know I'm the King of Clarity. And if that's what gets them to talk to people and refer, then that's all I need. I'm the king. So the symbols, the snippets, and the stories, it's a process of distilling and boiling down to these little verbal business cards that get the point across and get through the filters of the brain.
And it's psychologically natural, and that's what you're talking about, is that it's the antithesis of marketing spin. It's the antithesis of all of the garbage that we've heard, all the clickbait that we've heard. And we talked earlier this in the show regarding the pendulum swinging back, and we as a digital new media audience, right, are now in another level of discernment than we've ever been before to actually filter out noise. Pardon me, and look for those true messages, those quick messages, those clear messages. So I think it's natural that we've had this tumult. Now we're trying to get past this, and the ones that are going to succeed, the messages that are going to succeed, are the ones that don't have the trappings of the noise and distraction.
And the clarity aspect then feeds into everything that a company does, the website, the sales messaging, all the marketing, and even right down to networking meetings where you introduce yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So if I walked up to you in an Indianapolis networking meeting, I said, "Hi, I'm Steve Woodruff," and you introduce yourself, and I say, "What do you do?"
Mm-hmm.
And you reach into your briefcase and pull out a 70-page white paper and say, "Let me begin to explain." I don't think so.
It's a really good read.
Very quickly find someplace else to go, and certainly I'm not going to be referring you to anybody. But it's the same with a website. You come onto a website, and often the idea is we're going to inundate you with as much stuff as you can possibly handle and more, and hopefully you'll click on something you like. That's a horrible approach. You've got to get within 10 or 15 seconds, get something across that's relevant or interesting, or you're just gone. I'm clicking away. So a lot of companies do not have what I call the clarity articles of engagement, the basic, fundamental, clear statements that then pervade everything in the communications outward.
Now, that's an outward conversation to consumers. There's also an internal conversation of clarity to employees.
That's correct.
So
many employees are not fully aligned and engaged because there's not this clear understanding of here are our principles, here's our goal, here's our direction, here's our messaging even. Mm-hmm. So you'll find many times if you ask an employee, what do you guys do or who's your ideal client or what, they don't even know. So it's incumbent on the leadership to have internal clarity that mirrors the external clarity, because these statements of purpose, the what we do, the who we do it for, the why we do it, what's the business pain, the how we do it, what's the differentiator, what's our niche, what's our pigeonhole. If people internally don't know it, then you're already writing off your best possible advocates who are going to grow your company.
Absolutely, and it's also a what do you call it? a Mark Twain or a benchmark of how clear how you're actually communicating, and how it's being perceived by your internal audience, because if you can't get everybody on the same page inside your own organization, you're not going to be able to execute with any degree of certainty a clear and concise message to the outside world.
Correct. And one of the primary ways that's done is through...
Hold on. Repeat that again. You just broke up.
One of the ways that one of the primary ways that that's communicated internally in a company is through story. Mm-hmm. And a company needs to identify its key stories that it's going to tell the new employees. You're going to onboard with these stories. You're going to reinforce current employees with these stories. The stories become the way that the culture is shaped and passed down, and the way the values are passed down. So if you had 10 company values up on a bulletin board that were just abstract words, trust, competence, blah, blah, you know, everybody can say the same things.
Yep.
But if you have these unique stories that show something about your company, that's how you get people aligned and engaged and moving in the same direction.
Hmm. So it's much more than a marketing tactic or even a discipline of communication. It is
It's the core foundation of the company.
Yeah, it's the
foundational
keystone.
Strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. And how plumb you are, I mean, you need to have that mirror, an objective mirror, but you need to come back to that on a regular basis and see if you've moved off mark as well, right?
That's correct. I was actually wrestling for the last 2 days. I've been wrestling with the words. Keystone is one of those words that's pretty correct. Creed is another one. Manifesto is another one. And these are things that you do return to and you say, wait a minute, you know, that isn't a fit for what we do because this is. Mm-hmm. And if we don't have a this is, then we'll be in reactive mode all the time and there will be no centralized, no single direction that people can adhere to.
You know, I hearken back to an interview that we had last year, and we've had a number of heads of marketing organizations be on the show. And one, I can't remember the individual, but one rings clear whenever they were taking on a new client, right? They would have their employees vote, not vote so much, but actually see whether or not this met their culture. As opposed to just doing the work and grabbing a hold of whatever company, whatever business that you can get, does it? I mean, what is a sign of respect to the employees of an organization to be able to give them the choice to be able to work? And if there are any type of red flags, get them connected and bought into what they're going to do for the client. That was a real eye-opening concept. And boy, wouldn't that be great for companies by and large to be able to invest in their employees and their culture that way.
If you think there's a very simple three-letter word that this kind of boils all the way down to, and that's the word fit. Hmm. So what kind of work is a fit for us? What kind of employee is a fit for us? What kind of client is a fit for us? What kind of marketplace is a fit for us? Hmm. The Clarity Manifesto is this is the fit. And when you do that, now you're saying, and this is not the fit. And that simplifies a lot of decision-making.
Wow.
As you say, we're going to go after this. We're not going to go after this, this, and this. It's liberating when people arrive at that level of clarity. Sometimes you can actually see the weight come off people's shoulders.
Wow.
They say, that's us right there. Now I know why I don't want to do that one over there.
Huh, that's great for employee retention, but at the same time, it can't be BS'd either. You have to hold true. And there can be some rocky situations where everything looks great, but if it's not a great fit, you got to be able to have the strength of character to be able to push away from engagements and situations that look very opportunistic.
That's right. That's why clarity is not just about having a fancy or a clever marketing campaign. Hmm. I mean, it feeds into marketing. It feeds into advertising. But that's not what I'm about. I'm about core strategy, core foundational identity, things that really do serve as the touchstone for the company.
That is awesome. Well, I know that we could go hours into this. So this is very intriguing, and it does kind of cut through the marketing BS, and it's almost like marketing spin gets spanked by this concept. You know, this is the grown up way to communicate, everybody. So with this, can you actually share a successful story that you're proud of with the use of Clarity, either externally or internally or both?
So identities will be changed, but this was very recent in speaking with another person that is very much like me, very much into brand and very much into this whole idea of alignment. And because none of us can read the label of the jar we're in, I have a coach that helps me with my clarity because I get all confused. I could sit and help anybody else and that's fine, but I can't think clearly about myself. So one of the individuals that I did a podcast with, he later set up a clarity session because as gifted, as smart, as full of tremendous stories, he was having a hard time articulating the exact creed of the value proposition. And we spent a few hours, and it just, as it always does, after about 90 minutes, it all started to come to the surface, and there it was. And I get the biggest kick out of that because even the most brilliant marketers still need clarity. And any company, every company, even people in career transition often are folks I spend time with because they need clarity. What's my identity? What's the best focus I can have? What's the best marketplace I can go in? What's the best message I can? It's all the same. So whether it's personal branding, whether it's the branding of a consultant, or in one case with a pharma company, we did this exercise with their training department. Because the training department did not have a clear identity in the corporation. They were just viewed as order takers, and they had no brand. So we created a brand by narrowing them down to three hashtags that this was the core of the value, entire culture on this branding exercise. And then 2 years later, we did it again because their responsibilities had grown and their staff had grown. So this works not only just for brand and marketing, but even for something like a department in a company.
Yeah, you mentioned marketers and how much of a interesting, but I mean, it is a bit of a conundrum that marketers need this as much as humanly possible. They're probably also the most reluctant to jump in and clear their message up because they think they've got it. I mean,
that's why I tell people, you know, people ask, well, who's your ideal client? And I say, well, okay, 7.5 million on the planet. They probably all need clarity, but that's true. It breaks one of my cardinal rules that you have to define a niche, but the niche is that they're hungry and they're humble. If somebody is hungry, they know they have a need. They've got to get this figured out. They know their focus is off or whatever. And if they're humble enough to say, I need help, then we can get there. There's no doubt we can get to the clarity.
Wow.
But if somebody's arrogant or they think they've got it all figured out, they don't need any help, then, you know, they'll eventually hit the wall.
How many humble marketers did we come across in 2018? That's interesting. And we know a few. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And we share some relationships, Steve. Well, you know, we certainly appreciate this message and this experience. And we certainly would recommend that our audience, our digital marketing audience, give pause and really have that wherewithal to be able to look at themselves in the mirror. And it's not only for who they are and what they're doing, but they're also doing it for their clients. Correct. And I mean, if they can't define that clarity and message, they need someone like you to be able to go in conjunction and help clear that message up. And it's not user persona and buyer journey crap. It's do you know who you're working for and what your client's all about? And if the client doesn't know that, you owe it to them to help them get a clear, discerning message, right?
Right. It's one of the things I say is that, look, the client is not responsible for figuring me out.
Yeah.
It's my responsibility to say, this is exactly what I do, why I do it, who I do it for. I can't rely on somebody else to spend all their brain processing power trying to figure out if I'm the right fit or not. No, that's my job.
That's awesome. Hey, well, Steve, we're coming up to the end here, and every time we have an interview, we always ask a couple questions to our guest. What bugs you about your industry right now?
Ooh, which industry, pharma or marketing?
Well, that's a big fork in the road right there. Now, we were talking offline, but I don't want to bring that conversation back into play. So let's just talk about marketing. What bugs you about marketing right now?
I think it's the infatuation with technology and algorithms and this endless treadmill that, you know, we got to jump on the newest thing. And I see it, unfortunately, as labor in vain. Facebook, Google, everybody's going to keep changing the rules of the game.
Yep.
And when I look at the fact that the vast majority of our new business comes typically from a handful of advocates and making referrals, and we don't invest the time in our advocates who are going to make the business, we invest all this time trying to chase all the latest trends, to me, that's just silly.
So it's that FOMA that has continued to pull us away from focus. All right. So conversely, what actually excites you about the industry that you're in right now?
Well, this is going to sound a little strange, I guess, but what excites me about my industry and all industries is that the long-term people win. If you're in it for the long haul, mm-hmm. if you're diligent, if you have character, if you value people, if you do great work, you're going to win. Now, there are going to be people that are flash in the pan that make $1 million based on, you know, some viral thing or whatever, and that's fine.
Sure.
But as I've told my kids many times, I have five boys. They're mostly grown now, from 17 to 30. One of them's already a consultant on his own. And I said, look, if you do great work, if you're reliable and responsible, you win. That's it. You know, you don't have to be an absolutely brilliant person, and you don't have to be Mark Cuban. You just get out there and do the work.
Get out there and do the work, people. Come on. So, well said, sir, and I applaud you for that, because and kudos for having five boys, man. That's awesome. Oh,
yeah, it's been an adventure.
It's like a gauntlet. Well, is there anything to wrap up? Is there anything that we can promote for you? And be clear, please.
If anybody wants to order the book, it's on Amazon. It's I've made a short link, claritywins.org, that brings you right to the Amazon order page. Mm-hmm. And then my website is claritifuel.com. And also on Facebook, I've got a page called King of Clarity, where I can be found. And things I found in the last year is doing these 3-minute videos that I call Clarity Over Coffee, where a couple times, 2-3 times a week, something stirs me up and I'll just do that. And it took me years to figure out a format of video that I liked. But it turns out that 2-3 minute snippet, I love that. And so those show up on Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter and various places, and it's become sort of my favorite way of communicating.
Well, you know, short form is being embraced to a large degree, and that's what we're seeing from the video consumers. So you're right in the right space at the right time, but it's also kind of apropos, don't you think, about what you're doing, is that if you're not able to get what you do and what your message is across in 2-3 minutes, you're not really being clear.
Correct. That's the proof's in the pudding.
Absolutely. So to our audience, certainly follow Steve over at on Twitter at S. Woodruff, on Facebook, King of Clarity, LinkedIn, S. Woodruff, and Instagram, Steve Woodruff. Any final thoughts to our listening audience?
Nothing final. I think we've gone over everything. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak both with you gentlemen and with your audience. And I look forward to hearing from anybody that's needing more clarity.
Excellent, excellent. So we're going to have all the links in the show notes, and we certainly implore our audience to go connect with Steve and ask mm-hmm. him some questions.
Yeah.
and see what you can do, because we all need some clarity in our life. So thank you so much, Steve, for your time today. It's been a pleasure, and we're certainly going to pick that book up and use it internally as well. We always need some clarity. Thanks for listening to Edge of the Web Radio, and a special thank you to all the colleagues here at Site Strategics, especially our guest, Steve Woodruff. Be sure to check out all the must-see videos over at edgeofthewebradio.com. That's edgeofthewebradio.com. And hey, make sure that you jump into the podcast, and if you like what you hear, give us some ratings and reviews, because that's what helps us bobble to the top of the algorithms in those spaces as well. And who are we going to be talking to?
On Thursday we're talking to John Henshaw. He was the former co-founder of Raven Tools, now working for CBS Interactive, and he started his own marketing community called Koi Wolf.
Excellent. All right, so we're swinging back around. Sorry we couldn't do last Thursday, but we're coming back around, doubling up, and we're having our Thursday show on the regular time as well. So from all of us over at Site Strategics, thanks so much, and do not be a piece of cyber driftwood. We'll talk to you next Thursday, or this Thursday, or coming up.